taken into exile from Jerusalem with the captives who had been exiled with Jeconiah, king of Judah, whom Nebuchadnezzar, the king of Babylon, had exiled. Esther chapter 2, verses 5 and 6. Mordecai is totally unrelated to the king and the Persian kingdom. He's a Jew living out his years in exile. He's also raising his orphaned cousin, Hadassah. And he was bringing up Hadassah, that is Esther, his uncle's daughter, for she had neither father nor mother. Now the young lady was beautiful of form and face, and when her father and her mother died, Mordecai took her as his own daughter. Esther chapter 2, verse 7. Hadassah, her Jewish name, comes from the word for myrtle, a lowly shrub, and it means fragrance. Interestingly, myrtle branches are still carried in procession at the Feast of Tabernacles, signifying peace and thanksgiving. As I mentioned earlier, her Persian name, Esther, means star, a reference not only to the star-like flowers of the myrtle, but like a star in the sky. This is the first reference to Esther, and already we have learned two things about her. She was orphaned, and she has grown up to become a beautiful young woman of incredible beauty. The original text is colorful, beautiful in form and lovely to look at. Before long, she will hear, "There she goes, Miss Persia," and she will win the lonely king's heart. It will be the classic example of the old proverb, "He pursued her until she captured him." But at this point, she knows nothing about the palace politics or a lonely king or what the future holds for her. She is simply living out the rather uneventful days of her young life, having not the slightest inkling that she will one day be crowned the most beautiful woman in the kingdom, as well as the new queen of the Persian kingdom. My, how God works. How God still works in uneventful times. Woven through the tapestry of this wonderful story, we find at least three timeless lessons thus far. The first has to do with God's plan. The second has to do with God's purpose. And the third has to do with God's people. First, God's plans are not hindered when the events of this world are carnal or secular. His presence penetrates regardless, even the godless banquet halls of ancient Persia. He is not limited to working in the Christian family. He is as much at work in the Oval Office as he is in your pastor's study. He is as much at work in other countries of the world, like Iran or China or the Middle East, as he is in America. To doubt that is to draw boundaries around his sovereign control. When we do that, we can easily stop caring about our involvement in the larger events of life outside our comfort zone and familiar territory. And when that happens, we stop becoming salt and light to the world. God is at work. He's moving. He's touching lives. He's shaping kingdoms. He's never surprised by what humanity may do. Just because actions or motives happen to be secular or carnal or unfair, it doesn't mean he's not present. Those involved may not be glorifying him, but never doubt it. He's present. He's at work.